Hello, everybody. We are continuing our work with the second part of Rays and Initiations. The Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries part two. We finished working, or talked about at least, the triple mechanism in the head, which DK said was not advisable to work with deliberately. Rather, we should control the mind and let the mind receive communication from three sources: from the world of ordinary living, from the soul, and thus consciously become the disciple, and then from the spiritual triad, acting as the intermediary between the monad and the brain of the personality. Those three areas of reception. We talked about the one of the important tests for initiation being the holding of multiple levels of impression, or multiple dimensions from which impression could come in the brain simultaneously. Okay, now we go on to number 23, program number 23. And let's make sure that the bracket is there. Okay. So, you can see for yourselves that this is a major and most necessary indication of a developing awareness, this ability to hold in the brain consciousness. The test, in order to be passed correctly, must involve the brain consciousness. The facts registered upon the subtler planes must be correctly registered, recognized, and interpreted simultaneously upon the physical plane. And while it might be much easier to be abstracted from the brain and to deal with the phenomena of the various levels in their own terms, we are here to redeem the lower substance of which the brain is composed, substance inherited from the previous solar system, essentially, and I think somewhat conditioned by the events on the moon chain, which is resonant with the energies of the previous solar system. And so our registrations have to penetrate all the way down into the physical brain. And while it is possible, under some circumstances, to take some of the higher initiations detached from the brain and detached from the personality, in general, the brain consciousness is needed. So you can see for yourselves that this is a major and most necessary indication of a developing awareness. A master has to be aware at any time, on any plane, and at will. So this is a huge demand, really. And I suppose there are, well, I don't know if this is going to include the monadic and logoic planes, but certainly the five planes of human and superhuman evolution. It will also be obvious to you that this will be a growing and an increasing perception. Yes, it doesn't all come at once, quite obviously, for which the intermediate stages between initiations prepare the initiate. So there is always work to be done. And the work between initiations prepares for the future revelation conferred at initiation. So it will be obvious to you that this will be a growing and increasing perception. We all know that as we move along the path, more and more delicacy and refinement of perception becomes possible to us, at least if all is going desirably. A growing and an increasing perception for which the intermediate stages between initiation, there's much work to be done here, prepare the initiate. Gradually, each one of the five senses, plus the common sense, the mind, has to demonstrate the effectiveness of its higher correspondence or correspondences, and thus of a developing subtle apparatus. And if we were to, for instance, you're probably quite familiar with this, but If we go here to, now let's call this 200. And if we're going to fellowship, or rather the a treatise on cosmic fire. Okay, there we go. And it's page 188, we see exactly these higher correspondences to the five ordinary senses. Here they are for the astral plane, the mental plane, and going on to the buddhic plane and atmic plane, not including all of the higher planes. And there are probably correspondences which we cannot even name, which relate to the monadic plane and to the logoic plane. And these would be registrations possible for those beyond the level of master, and maybe even relatively far beyond the level of master. Gradually, each one of the five senses, plus the common sense, the mind, the sixth sense, the synthesizing sense, the sense that correlates the testimony of the five senses, has to demonstrate the effectiveness of its higher correspondence, and thus of a developing subtle apparatus. You know, if we're going to, for instance, look at, let's just say, you know, follow the sense of hearing, which exists as a normal sense upon the fifth subplane of the etherophysical plane, the gaseous level, we would move to then to clairaudience, and we would move on the mental plane to higher clairaudience, and we would move on the buddhic plane to comprehension, so to speak, of the four sounds, and then to beatitude. And thus it would be, as we take each sense in terms of its higher correspondence. Of course, we have on the, actually on the sixth and seventh subplanes from below on the mental plane, correspondences to levels on the buddhic and atmic plane which are not discussed. But we might say that imagination could be looked at as responding to corresponding to response to group vibration and emotional idealism to telepathy, if we compare the astral and the mental planes. Okay, so the higher correspondence has to be demonstrated, and the subtle apparatus which we are obliged to build over time takes shape and becomes effective. Through this apparatus, the initiate is put in touch with widening areas of the divine state of mind, or with the planetary consciousness, especially as it manifests on the cosmic physical plane, because not as it manifests on the cosmic astral plane, not yet. The initiate is put in touch with the divine state of mind, or with planetary consciousness, until the mind that is in Christ truly becomes the mind of the initiate, with all that those words entail of meaning and of esoteric significance. You know, we might say the perspective of the Christ. And we must remember that he is focused, or see, he has the ability to focus on the logoic plane. He is an initiate, becoming initiate of the seventh initiation, and that necessarily does involve the logoic plane. So obviously there are depths to this phrase, the mind that is in Christ. Of course, it's loving mind, it's compassionate mind, it's the mind that sees in unity and sees in synthesis. It's the mind that understands the condition of anything that it observes on the cosmic physical plane. It is many, many things. You know, on the least of levels, it has to do with the loving mind. It's a Venusian type of mind. to think in the heart and to love with the mind. Anyway, the mind that is in Christ, which we indeed must achieve, becomes truly the mind of the initiate with all that those words entail of meaning and esoteric significance. And every once in a while, perhaps we feel that state of soul coming over our perceptions, and maybe occasionally something higher from the great Lord himself, or we might imagine that it is along that stream. Consciousness, sensitivity, awareness, planetary rapport, universal consciousness, well, you know, what is that? Maybe consciousness, increasingly, of the solar system. These are the words which we must consider sequentially developed and in their true esoteric sense, meaning that there's a way of interpreting them which is far deeper than the customary manner. It's all a question of sensitivity. Initiation conduces to increasing sensitivity. The great star Sirius, which is behind all of our initiatory processes in the solar system and especially on this planet, is a brilliant star of sensitivity. Let's see. These are words which we must consider. And what has happened here? Uh-huh. There it is. Almost erased that. Increasingly, we are capable of identifying with other contents of consciousness. Items which are perceived are really contents of consciousness of the one perceiver. And they, as we perceive them, become contents of consciousness of our own consciousness, though not to the same degree, because it is the great perceiver which through self-perception has created that which becomes for us the normal content of consciousness. In other words, when I see a tree, it is a different registration than the planetary logos whose consciousness has created that tree. So anyway, ever deepening sensitivity becomes possible to us on the path of initiation. You have here a wide and general picture involving the goal, the means or mode. This is, let's call it the process of initiation. The testing point, which is can these subtle perceptions be registered really accurately in the physical brain? Can these subtle perceptions be accurately registered in the physical brain? And the physical brain. So you have the wide and general picture involving the goal, the means or mode. We must always be tested to make sure that we have actually accomplished that which we intend to accomplish. So just as in a normal school, there are tests and quizzes and pop quizzes, as I discussed before, so there are the tests arising in life, interestingly, these are especially administered in the sign Scorpio, which is the triple sign, and tells us that all the higher registrations must be brought right down onto the physical plane, and all of our so-called abilities must be demonstrated on the physical plane. So these are four factors which have received little or no attention where initiation has been dealt with in the occult writings. So he really is giving us some new points on initiation and some factors which we normally have not been considering. They are nevertheless of major importance, these four factors. I'm dealing with them here because of the stage of development now reached by the human mind. And a lot had been accomplished between the time the Tibetan began his instruction and these later years of the 1940s when that particular phase of his teaching, the second, was coming to an end. So they are factors of major importance. I mean, sometimes we might discount the importance of the physical brain and simply consider it a limitation which induces towards the time-space illusion, but it is the place of anchoring where all that is registered on the higher planes eventually must be accurately discerned. So I'm dealing with them here because of the stages of development now reached by the human mind, because of their increasingly close relation to the physical brain, and because there are now so many aspirants ready to tread the path of discipleship, the path of initiatory training. That's what discipleship essentially is. Every true disciple is preparing for one initiation or another. Discipleship means, true discipleship means preparation for initiation. They are now in a position to work consciously at the task of a dual and constant process of spiritual and physical recognition. So we have the higher planes and we have the dense physical brain, our ordinary world of the senses, and there must be no blockage between those higher types of registrations and the registration that is possible of them when in the physical brain. In other words, the physical brain must not become the limitation, must not remain the limitation it customarily is. So that was a discussion, basically, of the dual life of the initiatory process. Okay, and he tells us that understanding about the brain and its relation to the personality and the soul is necessary if we are to understand this process of dual living. It would be very difficult to explain, so he deals with the brain as the delicate and receiving and transmitting apparatus. The brain is conditioned by the endocrine system, and the brain as transmitter becoming a powerful directing agency. All of this I discussed somewhat in the previous program. And although we perhaps cannot deal as directly with the mechanism, triple mechanism in the head, as we might think we should or could, we can at least deal with the mind. And this will have its immediate reflex effect upon the mechanism in the head. Sometimes it's much safer to deal with the psychological factor, the mental and astral factor, than with the dense physical factor. DK seems to emphasize that particular approach where we deal with the subtle factors and they automatically condition the matter through which they must manifest. So now we start a new section here on the dual life of the disciple, not just the dual life of the initiatory process, but the dual life of the disciple. Okay, I have divided this theme into two parts, owing to the fact that the dualism displayed by a master and that displayed by a disciple are not identical or one and the same thing at advancing points of distinction. The subject, when you first approached it, seemed of relative simplicity, but a closer consideration of it will present great and unexpected dissimilarities. So he's drawing our attention to the kind of duality that distinguishes the consciousness of a master and that which distinguishes the consciousness of that lesser being known as the disciple. In connection with the dual life of the disciple, the factors involved are the threefold personality with an awakening or onlooking consciousness centered or focused in the brain. So one factor is the threefold personality. The soul, which seems at first the ultimate goal of attainment, but is later seen as simply a system or collection. This is interesting. A system or collection of fusing spiritual attributes. After all, we do build into our causal body these various qualities and values, and they are there stored in the repository we know as the egoic lotus or the causal body, and they do interplay with each other or enter a state of fusion, so they aspect each other and stimulate each other and build upon each other and are augmented by the presence of each other. So the soul, which had seemed the ultimate goal of attainment, but it's really, this is a great definition of the soul. Okay, let's put that down. Excellent definition. Okay, I'll write it all out. Definition of the soul, a system of or collection of fusing spiritual attributes, and the lowest aspect of the spiritual triad, the abstract mind. These are, in a way, sort of three minds, a concrete mind focused in the physical brain, and the soul, which can be focused in the physical brain, but which is another aspect of the mind, the sun of mind, and then later, the lowest aspect of the spiritual triad. So, in connection with the dual life of the disciple, the factors involved are these three factors. Personality consciousness, focused in the brain, the soul, and the abstract mind. The disciple feels that if he can attain the immediate and fused consciousness of the three, he has attained. In a way, it is a form of three minds unite. There are a number of these triplicities to which the fifth ray word of power, three minds unite, could apply. The disciple feels that if he can attain the immediate and fused consciousness of the three, he has attained. He realizes also that this involves the construction of the antikarma, otherwise the abstract mind could not be normally reached. Otherwise the abstract mind could not normally be reached. But, you know, interestingly enough, in the structure of the mental unity, egoic lotus, and monastic permanent atom, we do see, yes, that this is the triple antikarana, kind of a triangle. So there is one method of reaching the abstract mind, not via the method of projection the Tibetan has given us, but perhaps by deep contemplative thinking that leads into the spiritual triad along this particular line. This, of course, this line is the method that he has given us, and it is, I would say, the most modern method. Others have reached into the abstract mind using this particular line of connection, working from the second subplane of the mental plane to the third, and through, I think, the processes of thought, rather than the specific occult processes that DK has given us in the antikarana material. All these factors, for one who has just been admitted to the path of discipleship and who is finding his place within an ashram, seem an adequately difficult undertaking and one that engrosses every power he possesses. Well, this is an initial condition. But obviously there are more advanced and difficult processes which will be demanded. The disciple feels that if he can attain the immediate and fused consciousness of the three, notice the word immediate, because it means that they are, let's just say, immediately available. And, you know, this word fusion is particularly related to the soul. I am the soul in which all souls are fused. It's a word that's maybe different from the word merged, which relates to form. This, for the time being, is true. And until the third initiation, these objectives, their conscious fusion, these objectives, let's just say, uniting the lowest aspect of the spiritual triad, the soul and the brain, and I suppose through the concrete mind, these are the objectives. So until the third initiation, these objectives, their conscious fusion, plus a recognition of the divine planes of awareness to which they all admit him, and let's just say that the soul and the lower part of the triad are not customary. Soul and the lowest part of the spiritual triad are not customary yet, indicate the disciple's task and keep him fully occupied. And, you know, really that means that this is keeping most of us fully occupied. The number of initiates of the third degree is not yet large, and there's much work to be done along the line of preparation. To the recognitions entailed, he has to add a growing capacity to work on the levels of consciousness involved, not just touching them, but receiving them and working in relation to them. You know, in other words, polarizing the consciousness on those particular levels, or at least receiving their impression with relative fullness and with accuracy. Remembering always that a plane and a state of consciousness are synonymous terms. That's another one of those golden statements. Very, very important. So I'll make it, you know, bigger to stand out here. A plane and a state of consciousness are synonymous terms. So he recognizes something which is not the same as polarization upon the plane which has been recognized, and he's learning how to work on the levels of the soul. So we can call this work within the higher mind, i.e., on the second and first subplanes of the mental plane. So that's the subplane on which his egoic lotus is focused. That is the second, because by this time he is certainly an initiate of the first degree, and by the time we have the first degree, the egoic lotus is focused on the second subplane. And then the abstract mind, which is focused on the first subplane. So he's learning how to work in those realms where response to group vibration and spiritual telepathy are the cities which are to be developed. Okay, here's a growing capacity, growing, so everything is gradual, right? To work on the levels of consciousness involved, remembering always that a plane and a state of consciousness are synonymous terms, and that he is making progress, becoming aware, building the Atikarana, training as a hierarchical worker within an ashram. You know, we would say here, at least on the periphery, familiarizing himself with new and opening spiritual environments, opening to him now, widening his horizon, ever able to sense more sensitively, stabilizing himself on the path and living upon the physical plane, the life of an intelligent man within the world of men. Well, this is what progress looks like. It's quite a synthetic sentence, isn't it? So he's learning to work on the levels of consciousness involved, and his progress involves awareness, building of a certain phase of the Antikarana, at least unto the abstract mind. Of course, the Antikarana goes beyond and beyond and beyond all that, leading eventually back to the dread point, the one and only point of cosmos, but that's, way ahead of anything we can think of realistically. He's making progress, becoming aware, building the Antikorana, training as a hierarchical worker during these initiations of the threshold, during these probationary initiations, within an ashram, at least on the periphery of an ashram, as Master DK's chosen groups were. Becoming familiar with new and opening spiritual environments, widening his horizon in a much larger world, and becoming truly mentally polarized and stable upon the path, and meanwhile living on the physical plane, intelligently, productively, serviceably within the world of men. This is always necessary. He is demonstrating also no freakish peculiarities. Sometimes people think that in order to be spiritual, you have to be a little strange. I'm remembering a Gilbert and Sullivan opera called Patience, in which there was a contrast between a true aesthete and one who was an aesthetic sham. And the one who was the aesthetic sham was demonstrating these outlandish and rather freakish peculiarities, calling attention to himself, and was not the true aesthetic. So he is demonstrating also no freakish peculiarities, but appears as a man of goodwill, of benevolent intelligence, of unalterable goodness. That's so important. It has something to do with really being subservient to the will to good, and of stern and unchangeable spiritual purpose. The high demand and the fluctuations of the path of aspiration are no longer dominating him. He is no longer subject to them. So, goodwill. I mean, sanctified normality. That's what the true initiate demonstrates, as Master DK tells us. Is that enough of a goal for a disciple? Well, he causes us to think, of course it is. Does it seem well nigh impossible of accomplishment? Well, it depends on the day, perhaps. And can you undertake such a proposition and make good your undertaking? So he demands, that we question ourselves. There are times when the demands of the path may seem excessive when compared with the ordinary fluctuating life full of circumstantial vicissitudes. But if we have stern, we're this is full of commitment and not to be deviated. It is intensely focused purpose. Sometimes the word stern means unsmiling and all that. This doesn't mean that we cannot have a sense of humor and still sustain an unchangeable spiritual purpose. So he has laid out the requirements of the path of discipleship. Of course, all of this has been done in his other books, but here he's taking a higher perspective, a more synthetic perspective, and he's really writing for quite well-trained disciples who can begin to think in terms of contact with the spiritual triad and eventually of true initiation. Most assuredly, you can. All right. He's giving us some encouragement here, and we, from time to time, need it. The Master has spoken how he has supported disciples, unknown to them perhaps, in their times of weakness, both physically and psychologically. So he is a great assurance behind our accomplishment, but he reminds us that we have powers of which we hardly know, and if these powers of will, let us say, are utilized, that we can accomplish very much of what is demanded. So most assuredly, you can. For the factor of time enters in, and the disciple is free to submit to its conditioning, particularly in the early stages of his discipleship. Well, you know, there is only so much that can be accomplished in a certain span of time, but the initiate accomplishes much more. An almost miraculous accomplishment from the perspective of the disciple. And the initiate becomes the master of time. And he learns to work at such a point of tension that far more can be accomplished in the span of time than is possible for the disciple, and especially for the aspirant. So he is free to submit to its conditioning. It's interesting, the world of conditioning, the world of conditions is the world of Saturn, and Saturn is the lord of time. Conditions are things as they are, and Uranus represents the purposeful relationships of things as they should be, the archetypal relationships. So he submits in the early stages to the conditioning of time. This usually does at first knowing nothing else to do. But the speed or the sattvic or rhythmic nature of his spiritual life eventually changes this attitude. And we have to understand that although rajas seems like a great activity, sattva is actually faster than rajas. Rajas actually faster than rajas. Certainly, than tamas. Tamas is the inertia. Rajas has great activity, but oftentimes that activity is not so wise, and with the establishment of right rhythm, then real accomplishment occurs. We can think then that in the seventh ray age, which will be the age of rhythm, and thus the age of sattva, that a great deal spiritually will be accomplished by humanity. But the speed or the sattvic or rhythmic nature of the spiritual life eventually changes his attitude. He then works with no true consciousness of time, except as it affects other people and his associates upon the physical plane. So he is not worried about his own accomplishments in terms of time. The sense of the eternal has entered. He is not worried about his own accomplishments in terms of time. The eternal has become, he lives in the eternal. Well, it's just, you know, there is that great mantra, speaking of those who live in the eternal and know the self as one. So he lives increasingly in the eternal and the eternal now. And he knows that all things will definitely, inevitably come to fulfillment. He realizes that other people are much bound by the time sense. So the disciple becoming initiate has less and less of the usual limiting sense of time. Though there is a time-space schedule to be upheld, he works with efficiency. He knows, according to the rules of the road, there is no rush, no hurry, and yet there is no time to lose. So there are expectations in terms of time for others, but his higher ego is free of the normal time compulsions. The personality is anguished and says the Tibetan realizes that time is short, but the soul consciousness realizes more of eternity. Really, there's been no beginning, there can be no end, and that is a great mystery. So our endurance in eternal duration has been forever and is guaranteed, and once that sense of things begins to descend into the consciousness, then we can work in this way with, as DK says, no true consciousness of time as time is usually considered. I suppose so much of overcoming illusion concerns our ability to work unoppressed by the customary limitations of the time sense. At first, his registration of that which is sensed or seen upon the subtler planes, you know, the astral or mental plane, or the soul plane, the higher mental plane, is slow. It takes time for contacts and for knowledge gained to penetrate from the higher levels to his physical brain. And probably at night, there's a great deal of knowledge registered, but can it make its way into the physical brain without being destroyed by the vortex, you know, the whirlpool, as it's described in the Kalevala, the spiritual saga of the Finnish country, that whirlpool destroys those internal registrations, so the brain does not capture them. This is the reason that we don't remember our dreams as much as we might, and the higher contacts as much as we otherwise might. So the initiate has to master this particular vortex. So at first, his registration of that which is sensed or seen upon the subtler planes or the soul plane is slow. It takes time for contacts. So at first, it takes time for contacts and for knowledge gained to penetrate from the higher levels, soul levels. You know, we're dealing here largely with the higher mental plane. The contacts at first from the higher mental plane, and especially the second and first subplanes from above, to penetrate to his physical brain and to be registered in normal physical brain personality consciousness. This fact, when he discovers it, tends to upset his time awareness. And the first step is therefore taken on the path of timelessness. Speaking symbolically, this is so important that the time-oppressed disciple step increasingly onto the path of timelessness, in which the illusion of time, not necessarily space, will be overcome, and in which the initiate consciousness will be established. So he's realizing that there's a certain percolation time, if we will. One of the amounts of time given for this type of percolation from a higher plane into the physical brain and into outer manifestation has been given as 14 years. It takes that long for an idea to make its way down into a physical expression. So this fact, when he discovers it, this time lag, as it were, tends to upset his time awareness. And a new attitude is developed. There is a peace which passeth understanding, it abides in the hearts of those who live in the eternal. There is a power which maketh all things new, it lives and moves in those who know the self is one. So the initiate consciousness is that consciousness which is characterized by living in the eternal and knowing the self as one. Living in the eternal naturally will negate our normal sense of time awareness. Of course, the whole universe is, in a sense, timed, but that's a much higher type of apprehension. So, and the first step is therefore taken on the path of timelessness. I think that's so, you know, some of these things I'm as if noticing for the first time in such a concerted way, because I have not as laboriously read through this material as I'm forced to do when trying to expand upon it, explain it somewhat. symbolically speaking. He gains also the capacity to work with greater rapidity and mental coordination than does the average intelligent man. So this is the initiate organizing for speed, or the disciple must organize for the speed which the initiate can achieve. And because these attributes are all fusing in the realm of the soul, they are much more rapidly available to the man. So a higher order of mercurial type of transmission and interrelation is now in effect. He gains also the capacity to work with greater rapidity and mental coordination. We're really talking about, you know, Mercurian factors here, aren't we? Than does the average intelligent man. In this way, he learns the limitation of time, the limitations of time as a brain condition. Well, notice this, the limitations of time. I say even the planetary logos has his own time-space schedule. So the limitation of time is a brain condition and learns also how to offset it and to work in such a way that he does more. He does more within a set time limit, which still exists practically, of course, than is possible to the average man, no matter how ardently that average man may pursue the effort. So this is the speed of the initiate, making things possible which we can only dream about and anticipate. So we learn how to offset the limitations of time as a brain condition. I suppose we are working more upon the soul levels registered in the brain, and there's a certain degree of synthesis that is already achieved in that soul consciousness, and the soul consciousness is affected by the intuitive consciousness, which gives us a sudden, immediate, Uranian, lightning-like apprehension without having to piece things together in a time-consuming Saturnian sequential manner. So in this way, he learns the limitations of time as a brain condition and learns also how to offset it, that brain condition, and to work in such a way that he does more within a set time limit, which still exists on the outer plane, than is possible to the average man, no matter how ardently he may pursue the effort. The overcoming of time and the demonstration of spiritual speed are indications that the dual life of discipleship is superseding the integrated life of the personality, though leading in its turn to a still greater synthesis and higher integration, and is presumably a higher degree of rapidity. So this is something that all of us striving towards initiation and seeking to demonstrate a true type of higher discipleship should attend to, the overcoming of time. I suppose this has to do with our particular perception of how reality is. I guess each in his own way must work on this overcoming of time. It's something like, we might say, the astrologically at least, the transition from Saturn to Uranus, at least Saturn as usually considered, to the sudden and synthetic combining power of Uranus. It's really Uranus in a way that is going to collapse time into the eternal now. There's something always fresh and immediate about Uranus, and the sense of the eternal now exists in the Uranian stream of energy, and the sense of the past and the future is negated, at least somewhat negated, and that sense of past and future is a very Saturnian sense due to the sequential perceptions of the physical brain. I don't think we overcome all sequential perceptions when we have eliminated the limitations of the physical brain. I think there's still sequence to deal with. It is my estimation, but the usual laborious slavery to sequence, which is enforced by the lower aspect of Saturn, is overcome with Uranian apprehension. So this is the dual life of discipleship, and it involves soul consciousness, and it goes beyond, strictly speaking, the life of the integrated life of the personality, which is not yet soul infused, and leads in its turn to still greater synthesis and higher integration. Integration proceeds in a universe until the universe is completed. Proceeds in a universe until the universe is completed. And then comes that amazing type of incorporation or absorption, which we would call the pralaya of the universe, and its reabsorption into the absoluteness. Okay, well, we're speaking of deep things here. And somehow the attempt to live in the eternal and to realize that, this is the, can you speak in such terms, this is the infinitive of an infinite series of universes or appearances of the absolute, self-appearances. And there was never a beginning, can never be an end, there's really only the eternal now, and the pondering upon the true meaning of the eternal now and its relation to eternity and eternal duration. These are initiatic contemplations, and the deeper and deeper meanings of them will dawn upon us only slowly if we really adhere to that form of contemplation. The dual life, which all disciples lead, produces also a rapidity of mental interpretation. This is a, DK is in so many respects a Mercurian figure. You know, he's the messenger, he's Gemini, he's Mercury, he is bringing in a Mercurian way so much of what the hierarchy knows to intelligent humanity. The dual life, which all disciples lead, true disciples, produces also a rapidity of mental interpretation which is essential to the sane registration of the phenomenal life of the various higher planes and states of consciousness. Well, everything is so much faster on those higher levels that there has to be a rapid mental interpretation, otherwise we would be simply overwhelmed. And notice how he points out the word sane. He's really interested in the health of our consciousness process. It's fairly common to make premature contacts with higher levels and to go into some form of unhealthy response or not sane response. So he's always talking about that sanctified normality which characterizes the life of the initiate. So how would you necessarily know the initiate? Well, not by his bizarre or peculiar behavior. So here is a flourishing of the Mercurian response, a rapidity of mental interpretation, which is essential to the sane registration of the phenomenal life of the various higher planes and states of consciousness, and let's just say, and these are rapid by comparison with phenomena of the lower worlds. Forget not that all our planes are subplanes. They're solar planes, really, of the cosmic physical plane and are therefore phenomenal in nature, but phenomenal in nature from a cosmic point of view. So even what occurs in Shambhala and on the logoic plane is cosmically considered phenomenal and not really noumenal, not understood in terms of cosmic causes. as they are contacted and recorded, and the knowledge is transmitted to the physical brain via the mind, and that is, you know, all levels of the mind, but this must mean including concrete mind, there must always accompany them a true interpretation and a correct recognition of things as they are. Disciples are supposed to be intelligent, and you know, mystics may register many things they don't understand. May register many phenomena they do not understand. The disciple is supposed to have the understanding mind. So it is here that the non-disciple and the psychic go wrong, for their interpretation is almost always fundamentally in error. Not just in error, but fundamentally in error. They don't have the training, the academic training, the experiential training to really put what they experience in a larger context accurately. And it takes time coming within that cycle of limitation intelligently to interpret and truly register what the perceiving consciousness has contacted. So contact is no guarantee of intelligent interpretation. Okay, so it takes time coming within the cycle of limitation intelligently. I mean, we have to work these things out. It may be slow at first. What did that impression really mean? Intelligently to interpret and truly register in a true manner what the perceiving consciousness has contacted, and not to be, let's say, insanely, unhealthily swept off our feet by the amazing types of contacts we may touch. But the mind must work upon that. And DK has been so active in helping the modern disciple to build the mind so that it can interpret that which is contacted. When the time factor no longer controls, the interpretations registered by the brain are infallibly correct. And that would be a straight transmission. Let's call it a straight intuitive transmission. I have here given you a major piece of information, and well, there is something, you know, related to the fourth ray and the Buddhic plane. It's called the mountain whereon time dies. And so when a true intuitive consciousness of the Buddhic plane, which is the first real level of the cosmic ethers, is available to man, that type of impression available to man, then Saturn falls, we might say. Saturn is no longer interfering with the simultaneous registration of, a simultaneous and accurate registration of that which the intuition will convey. The intuition will convey suddenly and all at once a great deal of information which normally has to be worked through otherwise. There's a lot here, a lot. So I think what I will do is say that this is the end of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program 23, pages 433 to 436, and we'll beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program number 24, pages 436 to something. Well, DK is really speaking from the inside out here, and he's talking about how we can become higher psychics of the true kind and not let brain conditions and even the conditions of our lower mind become impedimentary or impedimental or impediments to the full possible impression from the plane on which things are known as they are, namely the Buddhic plane and planes above. So we have to break out of the kind of fragmentation in duration which time is. Time fragments eternal duration. Time tends to veil the eternal now, tends to fragment that now, so that we are deluded by the impression of past, present, and future. Those are practical factors, of course, when working in the lower worlds, but in terms of receiving the impression of things as they really are, this Saturnian, lower Saturnian time sense, which is characteristic of the physical brain, unless it's really trained and sensitized, and characteristic of the concrete mind, unless it is devoid of illusion or disabused of illusion, those lower conditions have to be dispelled. So that there is a true registration of things as they are, as perceived from the first level of the cosmic ethers, from the plane of intuition, the plane of pure reason, the Buddhic plane. Okay, friends, I think that'll be enough for the moment, and we will continue with program number 24. This stuff runs deep, doesn't it? So, you know, this is just the barest type of introductory elaboration on these ideas. And you'll make your own, of course, when you study it in great depth. But maybe some of what is here being offered can assist in that depth of study. So we'll see you for program number 24 shortly. Bye-bye.